Chapter 9. We jumped into the Slithin system, or whatever it is called. The planet we cared about is named Slithin, so it is typical to just use that name for the entire star system, unless there is more than one significant planet there. Maybe I should call the system Slithin and the planet Slithin 2, like they do on Star Trek. Whatever. Anyway. We jumped in on the other side of the star from the target planet, directing our unavoidable gamma-ray burst away from the plane of the ecliptic, where the local sensor coverage was thin. Valkyrie carried substantial velocity compared to Slithin, requiring us to decelerate while we approached that world. For this stop on our galactic ass-kicking tour, Smythe's team would not be needed, not even as a backup. This tour stop was all Skippy the Magnificent with an assist from Bilby. Plus me cooking up the idea. But our AIs would be doing all the work. Once the ship was stationary compared to the planet at a distance of 9 light seconds, we began accelerating again. Bilby controlled the ship's flight, or he programmed the autopilot. His very difficult task was to keep the ship stationary above one point on the surface while we were at a distance and speed beyond orbiting that world. Basically, he had to fly the ship in a tight circle while the planet rotated on its 23-hour day. To an observer on the ground, if they had been able to look up and see our stealth battlecruiser, we would have been a motionless dot, as if Valkyrie was painted on the sky. The task is harder than you might think. Bilby's navigation had to keep us exactly above that one spot from a distance of 2.7 million kilometers. He had to account for the way the planet wobbled slightly on its axis, even how the two small moons tugged at the surface as they orbited. We flew in a long arc, the engines only changing our velocity slightly, with most of the thrust being used to bend the ship's course around the world so far away. While Bilby kept the ship in a very high geostationary orbit, Skippy created one micro-wormhole after another. One end of each wormhole was in an empty cargo bay, the other secured in a tiny containment vessel. The vessels were loaded one by one into a railgun. That was very precisely aimed by Skippy and fired on a regular schedule. As each vessel left the railgun barrel, it continued onward, coasting toward the planet. The containment vessels had a limited ability for steering. Skippy made fine course corrections to guide them as they approached Slithin. Before the vessels contacted the atmosphere, they dispersed into dust, allowing the exposed event horizon to fall down to the surface. Skippy kept the micro-wormholes tightly wrapped until they reached the surface, at which point he expanded them open to about a millimeter in diameter. The first wormhole cored out a tunnel 160 feet long before it was overwhelmed and collapsed. That left a rod of dirt and rock, 160 feet long and 1 millimeter in diameter, in one of our cargo bays. The rod was consumed by a plasma oven which ingested, burned, and scattered the rod into dust. The second micro-wormhole flew into the tunnel created by the one ahead of it, barely scraping the walls and digging out nearly another 200 feet before it too collapsed. Two micro-wormholes expended, 360 feet of tunnel dug out. We had to tunnel down 60 kilometers to reach the third and last elevator shaft that led to the bioweapons research base. 60 clicks is almost 200,000 feet. Skippy estimated that because the rock of the planet's crust would become more dense with depth, the micro-wormholes would each dig out an average 70 feet of tunnel. That meant, and I did this math myself so you should be impressed, we needed 2,800 micro-wormholes. Each of them had to fly precisely down a millimeter-wide hole fired from a railgun 9 light seconds away while the planet turned on its axis. With 24 seconds between shots, Skippy and Bilby had to keep the ship stable and the railgun shots precise for 19 freaking hours. What did the crew do to help? We slept a lot. Seriously, other than a small bridge crew on duty, most of us passed the time quietly in our cabins. That included the keepers we had aboard. Most of them were happy to cooperate. The few assholes who refused to get with the program were persuaded to behave by applying carefully administered doses of sedatives. Humans walking around the ship were capable of causing vibrations and shifting the ship's center of gravity enough to throw off the aim of the railgun, so we chilled. For myself, I took a nap, then read a book, played video games, slept some more, and had simple food for breakfast and lunch delivered by bots. For dinner, we went to the galley in small, scheduled groups. Even showers were limited, because water is heavy, and Skippy did not want a lot of water moving around in pipes. The crew endured the forced inactivity with discipline and good humor, and it helped that not everyone was alone in their cabins, if you know what I mean. Our crew consists of people who are relatively young, healthy, and very fit. Skippy got inquiries that he passed along to me for approval for people to spend time in the cabins of other people. He also got discreet inquiries about whether certain, how do I say this delicately, whether vigorous intimate activities would be allowed. Man, I did not want to hear any details. Skippy said that if the crew confined their healthy adult activities to the gel-filled beds, it should not be a problem. My cheeks were burning red from embarrassment as I issued a general order about approved activities over the ship's network and told Skippy I did not want to know who was doing what with who. Mostly, I didn't want to know if Margaret Adams was sharing a cabin with anyone. My life sucks. 4 hours into the drilling operation, I finished reading a book. Okay, it was an audiobook. Yes, that counts as reading. Yes, I could have read the book myself, thank you very much. I usually prefer audio because a good voice actor really brings the story to life. Anyway, I finished a book and took a break before downloading another. Hey, Bilby, how's it going?
Oh, wow. Colonel Dude, this is hard, like super difficult, you know? Skippy is so picky about me keeping the ship exactly stable, aligned with the tunnel.
Are you able to do that?
Yeah, with help from Skippy. I had no idea how smart he is. I mean, I knew, but I didn't really know, you know?
In my head I was trying to diagram that sentence.
Sure,
I said to be safe.
The two of you make a good team? Sort of, but it's like he's a super genius and I'm his pet dog.
Sorry about that.
Don't be sorry, dude, he laughed. I like being a pet. That means Skippy has to do all the really hard stuff. Besides, he is too smart. He spends most of the time bored out of his mind because he has nothing to challenge him, you know? I would hate to be like that.
Yeah. Okay, let me know if anything changes. My dinner time schedule originally was at the same time as Adam's, and I didn't want to make things awkward, so I requested Skippy to change the roster. That put me in the galley at the same time as Captain Frey. She was in line to get lasagna just ahead of me. How are you, Captain? I asked. Partly I was being polite, and partly I just wanted to talk with someone after being isolated in my cabin all day.
Fine, sir. This is odd, though, isn't it? When I joined the Special Operations Group, I never thought my vital part of a mission would be lying in bed, she said, and her eyes flicked to a table where a guy was sitting by himself. He smiled at her.
Crap.
Well, for sure Frey was not all by herself in her cabin. Knowing that made the experience so much better for me. I ate my lasagna and made small talk about nothing until the chime sounded and we had to go back to our cabins, which I did, alone. My life sucks.
Better get ready, Joe,
Skippy announced with a yawn. It will be showtime in 30 minutes.
Ugh,
I yawned. He had woken me up from a nap just before the alarm I had set on my phone.
How's it going, Skippy?
This is tedious, man. Tedious.
Yeah, I believe it. Is it okay for me to go to the bridge?
Yes. Walk slowly, please. I have lost 17 micro wormholes along the way. Two of them were because people fell out of their beds during some, let's call it, gymnastics, and threw off my aim.
I'm sure they feel bad about that, Skippy. I would not be talking with them about the incident.
No harm done, right?
No harm done, he sighed. Although that is a lesson learned. Next time we do something like this, we should leave most of the crew behind in dropships.
I hope we never have to do something like this again.
Amen to that, brother.
How did we lose the other 15 micro-wormholes?
Parts of the tunnel drilled through soft material, and we hit an aquifer. The tunnel sprang a leak and filled with water. To plug the leak, I needed to send down a micro-wormhole to siphon off the water, then one to spray a sealant on its way down. Stabilizing the tunnel required 6 pairs of micro-wormholes, but now we're drilling through solid crust.
Is any of that going to delay the schedule? No, I padded the schedule for minor setbacks. We're okie-dokie to proceed. The only snag will be if there is an unscheduled use of the lower elevator. Any indication that might happen? No. This is the middle of the night at the base. That's why we set up the timing of the last bit of tunneling. I'll be on the bridge in 5 minutes. Getting to the bridge required coordinating with a crewman there going off duty and walking back to his cabin so his mass roughly balanced mine and did not change the ship's center of gravity. Settling into the command chair, I noted Sims was already there. She shrugged. It was better to be here than in my cabin. I hear you, I whispered. Skippy, talk to me. We're almost there. 410 meters to go before intersecting the elevator shaft. The liner of the shaft is a very tough composite material. I estimate it will require 6 micro-wormholes nibbling away at it to break through. We have to be gentle, or the breach could cause a detectable crack in the liner. Don't do that. Take your time. That's easy for you to say, monkey boy. I have been stuck creating, launching, and tracking almost 3,000 micro-wormholes. Did you dream up this stupid idea just to punish me? Of course not, Skippy. Good. Well, this punishing you is just a delicious bonus. He was steamed about that. Why, you, I ought to... Later. Focus on the task, please. It took 5 micro-wormholes to penetrate the elevator shaft lining, and the 5th one punched through all the way. Skippy had to collapse it before it hit the opposite wall. That was it. We were through. That was too easy, I noted, suspicious. Anytime the universe gives a gift to the merry band of pirates, I am suspicious. The liner material has become brittle over the years. It is not a problem for us. The Theranin really should do a better job of preventative maintenance. Yeah, well, hopefully they won't have to do that. Ready for Phase 2? Launching now. Phase 2 was dropping 12 micro-wormholes gently into the elevator shaft and letting them fall straight down into the terminal station at the base. To slow the tiny micro-wormholes down so they didn't overshoot the mark, Skippy flared the event horizons just enough to scrape the walls of the tunnel so they were barely moving when they passed through the existing hole in the liner. That was some fancy flying. He had to control the event horizons in real time down to the picosecond. It was not surprising that he was going out of his mind from having to concentrate so intensely for so long. 11 micro-wormholes survived to contact the station at the bottom of the elevator shaft. Skippy only needed 1 to make the plan work, if we got lucky. We did not get lucky, so he had to link together 5 of the little wormholes to hack into the station's network. Before Skippy did his magic trick, he planted another 3 dozen micro-wormholes at regular intervals all along the tunnel he had drilled. With that done, we were ready for Phase 3. And by we, I mean Skippy. Because it was all the work of his magnificence. The Theranin are paranoid about cybersecurity, and they are extra paranoid about it at one of their most sensitive research facilities, so even Skippy had to be super-duper careful not to get caught. Instead of attempting to penetrate the multiple layers of firewalls around the central control AI, he wriggled his presence into a system that was unlikely to attract any attention, a simple sanitation bot. The little bot spent its miserable life scrubbing gunk off every surface in the station. It and its identical fellows could go anywhere, completely unnoticed by anyone, including submines of the central AI. Being a biological warfare research station, the Theranin living there were obsessed with cleanliness, knowing the hellish materials they worked with every day. An army of bots scrubbing and polishing and spraying harsh chemicals was not anything the residents paid attention to, unless the bots were not doing their jobs. The bots cycled constantly around the station, cleaning their assigned areas, then returning to garages where they dumped their hazardous payloads, were sanitized, and reloaded with cleaning chemicals. The bot Skippy selected was no different. It was able to wander wherever he wanted it to go, and when that bot reached the border of its assigned area, Skippy merely transferred his presence to another bot. Within an hour, Skippy infiltrated the larger bots that attended to the electrical systems of the station and contacted the submine that scheduled their work. Soon, the altered schedule called for ordinary maintenance to be performed on the power cables that, among other things, connected to the base self-destruct system. When the Theranan designers set up the self-destruct, they ensured that system would always be available by providing multiple sources of power. That was a sensible and even clever precaution, except for one thing. The law of unintended consequences. That rotten, stupid law had caused endless problems for the merry band of pirates. Now, we could make it work for us. This time, we were the unintended consequence. "Ready, Skippy?" I asked to confirm.
"Ready, Freddy,"
he replied with a weary, half-hearted attempt at humor. "To be clear, yes, we are ready. All systems are go." "Understood. Shut down the micro wormholes, please." He would lose connection to the array of wormholes when we jumped, and they would then collapse on their own. It was better for him to slowly and quietly deactivate them, so there was no risk that the Theranan would ever detect even the faint radiation sometimes generated when they suddenly collapsed. "And done," he reported. "All micro wormholes are shut down." "Thank you, Skippy." "Fireball," I called to our pilot. "Jump us in." We jumped. And emerged in orbit just above the altitude at which a typical Maxulk's warship could jump out. With the awesomeness of Skippy the Magnificent, we could actually jump away at a much lower altitude, but we did not want to give away that secret in case we needed to use it later. We were located directly above the base, but moving past that point fast, our momentum carrying us away. "Fire mission," I ordered, and Valkyrie's special cannons blazed out. These weapons, not normally used in space combat, had the ability to disrupt the bonds that tied atoms together into molecules. The disruptors would not actually be useful against the deeply buried research base, but the Theranan did not know that. We had tuned the disruptors to be, well, especially disruptive. The pattern was chaotic, in a way that actually wasted and scattered a lot of the energy. It was less effective, but it looked impressive, and if the Maxulks later analyzed sensor data of the incident, they would be scratching their furry heads trying to understand how we had modified one of their weapons. I hope they scratched their furry heads until they were bleeding. A subsequent fatal infection would be nice too, but I wasn't counting on it. Anyway, as our disrupted disruptor beam struck the surface in line with the narrow tunnel that only we knew about, and chaotic energy from the beam disruptor energy blazed through the hair-thin tunnel, to any sensors in the area, it would appear that somehow our beam penetrated all the way down to the base. That mattered, because at the same instant the beam struck the bottom of the tunnel, the base's self-destruct system detonated. The detonations were in a sequence very different from the original programming of those devices, and Skippy retuned the nukes so their explosions would appear to have been triggered by the disruptor beams. Any sensors inside the base would have clearly known the nukes simply exploded when they received an unauthorized electrical signal that was not supposed to happen. But, sadly, those sensors ceased to exist a nanosecond after the nukes went critical. Did I say nukes? Yes, I did. The Theranan did not rely on atomic compression technology for the self-destruct system. They used the simpler, proven power of fusion. Half of the devices were hydrogen bombs. The other half were enhanced radiation weapons that we would call a neutron bomb. The extra radiation was intended to erase any possible trace of whatever microorganisms the Theranan had cooked up in their research chambers, though it really was not at all needed. The H-bombs were 200 megatons each, plenty to assure that absolutely no recognizable trace of the base remained.
"Success," Skippy announced quietly.
"Jump option Foxtrot," I said to Reed, and Valkyrie disappeared in a burst of gamma radiation 16 seconds after we emerged in orbit. "Bilby, are we okay?" I asked, after we had jumped only a few light seconds, far enough to be safely beyond the range of the Planetary Strategic Defense Network, close enough to transmit a message in almost real time. "Nominal," the ship's slacker AI said, demonstrating how much strain he was under. "The enemy network created a damping field faster than expected, but we only caught the edge of it." "Outstanding," I said with relief.
"Sir?"
Sims got my attention from the seat next to mine. She gave me a thumbs up. That was outstanding. The entire bridge crew joined her and given me a thumbs up salute. That kind of choked me up. It took me a moment to speak. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, especially Skippy and Bilby. We could not have asked for more. Please, don't, Skippy pleaded, his voice trembling. I can't take another nail biter like that. Ugh. Well, thank you anyway. I stood up and faced the main bridge camera. Hail the Theranin on the surface. Once again, the merry band of pirates had kicked ass. We destroyed a vital enemy base without giving away the existence of our advanced capabilities, and we made it look easy. The Maxalks would be trembling with fear, thinking we possessed some unknown superweapon that, in fact, we did not have. Damn, sometimes I really just love being a pirate. Connected, Bilby announced. This is Colonel Joe Bishop of the United Nations Starship Valkyrie. From Earth, in case you haven't figured that out yet. You just saw a brief demonstration of our firepower. We fired one of this ship's cannons and destroyed your most secure facility. In case the lesson did not get through your thick cyborg skulls, I will spell it out for you plain and simple. Do not fuck with us. Don't even think about it. Humanity is off limits to you little pinheads. If we even suspect that you might be involved in any way in a biological attack, even involved in a biological threat against humans, we will rain hellfire on every one of your worlds until the name Theranin is a distant memory. Bishop, out. I drew a thumb across my throat to cut the transmission. Pilot, this place looks like a bad neighborhood. Jump us out of here. Option Romeo. We emerged about 30 light minutes away and hung out there for 90 minutes. That was long enough to conduct a battle damage assessment. Target obliterated. Listen to the enemy reaction. They would need to change their little cyborg pants. And for Skippy and Bilby to recover from the strain. When I say obliterated, I mean there was no trace of that subterranean base remaining. The self-destruct nukes created a quake that rang the planet's crust like a bell, with violent shockwaves traveling around that world multiple times. Above the base, the crust had sagged inward in a crater, looking a bit like a sinkhole briefly, before magma erupted upward along cracks to fill in the crater with molten rock. Unfortunately, the Theranin had chosen that location for their base because the crust there was particularly thick, dense, and stable. So, the odds were against the incident resulting in a new volcano to scar the surface of Slithin. Thick black smoke was building a dense cloud over the site, and ash rained over a wide area downwind.
All right,
I said with a yawn as we listened to Theranin on and around the planet in full panic mode.
I call that mission accomplished. Let's wrap this up. Next stop on the tour is Paradise.
In my cabin, I flopped down on the couch, emotionally exhausted. Skippy's avatar appeared, looking weary.
Joe, you look worn out.
Kicking ass is hard work, I explained. Hey, sorry, buddy, I know you did all the work.
My brain hurts, he winced.
I need a vacation. I have a better idea. Why don't you relax on the couch with me? I patted the seat beside me. And we'll watch something. He was hesitant. Much as I love classic opera, I am not in the mood to truly appreciate a fine performance right now.
Opera? Dude, what you need right now is to rot your brain with some of...
I lowered my voice to a conspiratorial whisper.
The worst TV shows ever made.
Worse than Cop Rock?
I can't promise quite that level of suckitude, but behold...
I pressed a button on my phone and the opposite wall became a video screen.
The Black Scorpion. Black Scorp... Joe, she's a blonde chick.
Skippy, that is merely scratching the surface of why this show was epically bad.
Okay.
His avatar appeared on the couch, his little legs stretched out in front of him.
We can have fun mocking the show.
You know it, buddy. Ah, crap. The Black Scorpion had 22 episodes, proving that the universe hates humanity. Even Skippy couldn't stand it after a couple episodes. I deliberately mixed up the episodes, so we watched the beginning of episode 1, then part of episode 8, then back to 1. The plots actually did not make any less sense when you watch the shows that way. After enduring 2 or 3 episodes, I completely lost track of the Black Scorpion, so I switched to another classic of crap TV. The Brady Bunch Variety Hour. Spoiler alert, that was a big mistake. You did not know the Brady Bunch had a variety show? You do not know what a variety show is? You have never heard of the Brady Bunch? Consider yourself truly blessed. Really, I envy your ignorance. We switched to The Simpsons, then watched some Rick and Morty, until Skippy could barely keep his eyes open. If he wasn't just a hologram, I would have tucked a blanket over him on the couch and let him sleep right there. The next morning, Skippy was feeling burned out. But I had to take the Army Infantry fitness test that was overdue by, like, a month. Sims had to cross it off her to-do list, so I grunted and sweated through the damn test, including the leg tucks that I hated. The stupid leg tucks had been reinstated to the fitness test while we were away, and of course, Skippy gleefully notified me that he had helpfully downloaded the current version of the test during our brief visit to our home star system. After the fitness test, which I passed, by the way, it was time for a physical exam. Mad Dr. Skippy had his scary medical bot scanning, poking, and prodding me way more than I thought was necessary, but he grudgingly declared me fit for duty. That allowed Sims to cross another item off her list, and it was one less thing for me to worry about. After that, I still had a mountain of paperwork to complete, including preparing for an inevitable financial liability investigation for property loss. We had lost a mountain of equipment during our much longer-than-planned mission, and I had to account for it all. Some equipment had been discarded, some broken, some lost in action, some stuff simply misplaced along the way. What pissed me off is that a lot of the lost equipment was stuff that we acquired, like our battle cruiser. Even Krestang mech suits were acquired by the pirates, not funded by taxpayers on Earth. Why, then, did the U.S. Army require me to account for lost property? Because my diligent and efficient executive officer had logged all the property into a database, and Skippy also helpfully transmitted that data during our brief time on Earth. So, I wanted to get on top of the issue and avoid my crew having to answer stupid questions. Once again, my life sucks.